I'm not very computer literate, so I need a little help getting these started all the time. I'm pleased to be here this morning. I feel a little out of my league speaking to so many people of so many much caliber as we have here. But I will take just a few moments to share with you what we have done in Northeast Missouri with a small group of producers as we tried our venue with retaining ownership on cattle. Back in 99, a few producers, while I was out working their cattle, would just ask me, I wish I knew how my cattle did in a feed yard. Of course, no one had enough that they could take to the feed yard on their own. So I approached the extension office about it, and they helped us put together a program whereby we could find out how our cattle performed in the feedlot and at the packer. It also helped us to develop a relationship with the other segments of the beef industry, as in the feedlot and the packing industry. We were able to provide the buyers with more information on what our cattle were doing and what procedures had been done on them. We were able to provide potload size lots for freight efficacy. And then we also wanted to gain exposure and experience to retaining ownership in the feedlot and hopefully profit from that if there was profit to be made. So we took a little handful, about 10 small cow-calf producers that just entered a handshake agreement to put their cattle together for 1 year for these purposes. There was no compulsory membership for future years if they didn't like what they saw. So out of that, the NEMO Premier Beef Marketing Group developed. Some of the things that we wanted it to be something that all the producers could implement on their own farms and something that was doable. We had similar genetics. We divided the calves into weight ranges on commingling day. They all had to be vaccinated according to the requirements of the Missouri Stocker Feeder Quality Assurance Red Tag Program, similar to the VAC 45 programs and all of those that are out there. Our heifers were guaranteed open, and the producers have since been able to be enrolled in the age and source verification program. On commingling day, all the calves are weighed and sorted into similar weight ranges. They're all frame scored for the purposes of doing feed pro rationing later on in the process. And they're all ear tagged with a NEMO Premier Beef tag, and those are then correlated with the home ID so that each producer can use that information on their own farms when they get that information back. Of course, the QSA tags are already in place, but the double tagging helps us keep information rolling better in case there's some tag loss. We have a backup one to use. After that, they are loaded onto potloads, and then they are either sent to the backgrounder or directly to the feedlot. It started out that we always went to the backgrounder with everything, but as we gained experience with the program, we kind of came to the conclusion that these 700-pound calves and up really didn't need to be stopped and restarted at a backgrounder and then stopped and restarted at a feed yard again. With the assistance of the feed yard that we use the most now, he encouraged us to start coming directly there with our bigger cattle, and it really has proved to be pretty beneficial. This is a summary of the number of head that we have used in, or have put through the program in the last 11 years. We started out with a little over 300 head in the program, and it seemed really, really neat to everybody. So all of a sudden, for about 3 years, we had this great growth in numbers. And then, about 03, the weaned calf price at the sale barn just went through the ceiling, and so a lot of them backed out and thought, well, I'll take my money and run. But those that hung in there with us, we've kind of come down to where we're pretty static at around 400 head that we put through each year for a total of a little over 5,000 head in the past 11 years. Generally, we retain ownership on about 50% level. And in the feedlot phase, we've dealt with 9 different feed yards over the years, with our retained ownership percentage ranging from 25% on our first year to get our feet wet. And we have done as much as 75%, but we've kind of settled down on that 50% as a nice round figure that everyone is real content with. The feed yards are happy to finance the feed for us, so we aren't constantly sending checks back and forth. And they may or may not be willing to handle risk management for us. Sometimes we have to make our own calls. Sometimes they're willing to take our portion with theirs when they make some risk management decisions on that. Our carcass data is generally collected by selling the cattle on a grid. We have, on occasion, sold in a live market and paid to have our data collected. And pretty much now we've settled on one feed yard, which has been really doing a good job for us. Not that the others didn't, but they're a little closer to our vicinity, so the freight charges are down a little bit, and we're just real pleased with our results there. So is retaining ownership in the feed yard a smart choice? These next few slides, they've got a lot of numbers on them, but I'm just going to, for the sake of time this morning, I'm going to just concentrate on the lower levels. As you can see here in steers, in 2001, we lost money. But as you go across, that's the only year that we lost money in the steer industry. We go to the heifers. 2000 was the year that we lost money on heifers in the feed yard. Go on across. We have not lost money any other year. There may have been individual groups that did not show a profit, but overall, with everyone's cattle spread out over several groups, we have made money by retaining ownership. And this shows a little bit of just how much money those 5,000-plus calves have generated in the feed yard. The steers, on 100% ownership of them, would have generated over $125,000 extra dollars in the feed yard. And the heifers just darn close to $70,000 for a total of almost $195,000 profit from the feed yard above the weaning sale. So did the individual producers make money by retaining ownership? This is what I found. There were only 6 producers, and we have dealt with probably approaching 40 producers now, 35 to 40, who have been involved at one time or another. Only 6 have lost money by retaining ownership. 4 of those 6 were involved in 1 year only. They thought this was going to be a great windfall situation. They lost money that one of those 2 years that I had on the slide previously. Well, they didn't make money. So instead of taking the message and going home and making changes in their cattle crop, they chose to shoot the messenger. 3 of the 6 had less than 10 head represented, which if something happens to one, that doesn't give you much room for the others to make up the difference. And 2 of the 6 chose to put in their late calves, where they had just few numbers, and that resulted in later season marketing when the prices are a little lower. Then when he talked to me about this, he asked if I would share an example of how we have used retained ownership information to make changes in our herd. So I thought I would just use our own herd as an example. My husband and I have roughly 200 head of commercial beef cows. In the 2000 to 2004 marketing seasons, our cattle were grading 60 to 65% choice, nothing out of the wild blue at all. There were others far and above ours. So we were trying to make wise natural sire choices, but of course we all know that natural sires have low accuracy levels, and we didn't always get what we thought we were getting. So in 2006, Timed AI had made a lot of advances. So we decided we'd like to try that. So we started with about 70 head just to see if we could make it work and to see how fast the calves would come, whether we could handle that number of calves coming, you know, in a snowstorm or whatever. And it worked out wonderful for us. By 2007, we went right on up to AIing everything in our herd that we possibly could anyway. This is some of the results now that we have gotten since that time. Our percentage choice has climbed from the 60 to 65%. In 2008, we were up at 79.7. By 2009, we were over 80%. And so far, the cattle that have come back this year, we're about 84% choice. We never really had too much of a problem with growth on our cattle, but our percentage choice quality grade stuff really was an issue. So in 2008, I have listed here by the growth in order of gross carcass dollars from the highest to the lowest, the sire groups that gave us the highest gross carcass value. I know that doesn't necessarily equate with profitability. My profitability column wouldn't necessarily prove to be correct either, because then it depends on the time of year that those were sold. So I really didn't know what columns to use, so I settled on the gross carcass dollars. And if you look, the N8 sire tended to give us the highest gross carcass dollars. Keep your eye on him as we go through the others, as well as the AI sire number 5. The AI sire number 3, he gave us some real high carcass weight, but there were only 3 calves from that group, so I probably should have just eliminated it completely. And the N7 sire, he was history by that time anyway because of a foot issue. And then we go on down. But as you can see, that carcass weight tends to obviously equate with gross carcass dollars. Our ribeyes, back fat, that is also shown. Nothing too miraculous on that slide, the rest of it. Now we'll go to the 2009. N8 dropped down a little bit, but still had some fairly high carcass weight. But our AI sires really climbed up above it. The AI 8 sire had the high carcass weight, again, and also the 100% choice on all 3 of those. So we're getting high percent choice along with high carcass weights on those to give us the better carcass dollar value. And then we go to this year. Of course, there's no choice select spread this spring, so that's why most everything's pretty much equated with the carcass weight as far as its gross carcass value. You can see as you go down the list a little bit there that at times a higher carcass weight will be offset by a much higher percent choice. Oftentimes that percent choice also equated with higher CAB levels, and the CAB premiums were giving us quite a bit more premium than just the choice select spread. We go down to the lower AI 10 sire. We're starting to get a little bit smaller carcass weights there, but that sire was chosen specifically to reduce some of our cow size issues. We've got some cows that are just too big, and so we chose a different breed to reduce our frame size a little bit, and we ended up reducing our carcass weight too, which isn't any big. So we found that the cattle do have to perform in all areas to get the highest profit potential, and they have to grow well in the feedlot. They have to get a fairly heavy carcass weight without becoming too heavy, because we are still selling pounds. They have to fit into the grid's targeted quality and yield grades, and we can't seem to get carried away chasing one trait in a bull selection. some of the risks that were associated with it. We can have our health issues despite our good vaccination program. We are still taking farm calves into a setting where there's thousands and thousands of other calves. And we do have some health issues that arise. Growth performance can suddenly have a high cost of gain if corn tends to suddenly go through the ceiling. Our carcass performance, of course, if you get too heavy a carcass, at the time that I made this slide, the 29 pounds that equated to $296, that particular grid cutoff was 975 pounds. They've now gone to a 1,000-pound cutoff, and we really haven't had any heavy carcasses hit us lately. Price can be an issue. What if it goes through the bottom, like the BSE deal kind of took the bottom out of everything? And then also unrealistic expectations. If you're looking for a windfall and you're not willing to make changes that that your information is telling you to make, then there's not a whole lot of need in sticking with it. But the benefits have far outweighed the risks, we feel, for those of us who are still in the group. We're getting our information back so we can make changes. The producers have gained experience with all the other segments of the beef industry. They've become aware of the post-background profit potential of their cattle. Our goal the first year was to break even and get information back. Well, we made money and got our information back, and since then we've just continued to improve, we feel. And it's given us, as producers, more of a sense of accountability toward the industry overall.